like to call to order the city council meeting of City of Shore Acres on October 22nd at 7 p.m. Thank you all for coming. And first item on the agenda is roll call.
Stephen Jones, present.
Dana Wicker, present.
Rich Davis, present.
Matt Weber, present.
Next item is Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor of the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Okay, item 3.0, special presentation is none, David?
None.
None, okay. 4.0, approval of minutes. Y'all have a chance to go over September 10th.
Mm-hmm.
I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve September 10th. Council meeting minutes.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting minutes approved. 5.0, council reports and requests. I attended the Harris County Mayor and Council meeting last week and missed you there, Robin. Mike Talbot, Executive Director of Harris County Flood Control District, spoke, and he really didn't say anything out of the ordinary other than he kind of waits around for disasters to happen. He's got 30 stormwater detention centers in Harris County, encompassing 2,300 miles of area to monitor with 1,500 channels. But you really didn't say anything out of the ordinary. So that was that meeting. Next item, 6.0, public hearings, public comments, citizen comments, opportunity for citizens to comment on items that do not appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Members of council are prohibited by law from participating in discussion or deliberation of items that are not specifically identified on this agenda. So we're not going to be able to interact with you when you come up to the podium, but if you have any comments or concerns or questions, David can answer that when he gets his call. Anybody want to come on up? Anita?
Anita Willis, 1009 West Forest Avenue. 2 weeks ago, the city council gave me an extension until a temporary an extension until the 31st of December for my temporary housing unit, and I have not gotten it in the mail yet. I've had a request from Harris County Recovery, and also the demolition. I need to close out my demolition papers, and the deadline is the 27th of this month, which is very, very close. I spoke with them today over the phone, and they really, really surprised me. They're requesting the extension letter, and also they're requesting that Shore Acres write the letter addressed to me that my patio does not have to be demolished because that plays into the dollar figure. And this will close out my demolition file, finally. The reason for the delay is from the Harris County Recovery back and forth. So it's a real short letter. All it needs is to say that the patio is, you know, can stay. That's basically it. And that was a big surprise to me. I've had two residents ask me about the heavy trash pickup. Limbs, I understand about limbs, and I think most people do. But also, does it include trunks, tree trunks? Because we still have tree trunks that have been cut and are laying on people's property. And I don't know if we're going to have heavy equipment that's going to pick it up and put it in the dumpster, or if it's all going to be like manual by hand. The question came to me, was this large tree trunk, large limbs, if they need to be cut in a certain length, like no longer than 6 or 8 feet, tires, wheel rims, and et cetera. Sorry to open up a can of worms, but if they asked me, I didn't know what to tell them.
So. I'll let David touch on that.
Okay.
Next question.
Thanks. Yeah, but it doesn't say on here.
Specific items.
It does.
Okay. It says other large heavy items.
I know, but go to the next paragraph. Anyway.
Well, the tires is mentioned on here, but.
I was informed that the city has been operating in a deficit budget for 7 years. I can understand 4 years of that, you think about it. But 3 years, I don't know if it's going to be there's really something wrong with it. And so I don't understand that. I also think that on the grant, that it should be included somewhere in the budget. Even though we're not spending the money matching funds, the money is being spent and we need to see accountability for where that money is being spent and how it's being spent, where it's being spent. And I think that's a big issue. That's a lot.
Are the public hearings or public comments? Can I just make a comment from my chair after he's called?
No, you come on up here, give your name and address, and go ahead and do your comments.
My name is Jim McNeil, and I live at 222 East Forest Avenue. Sorry, there's something living up about 13. And I just noticed that in the last 2 years, we failed our water report. I'm sure you've heard a lot about this, but I haven't come to a meeting here with the council, so I really don't know. Are we getting any help from the EPA on that? Safe Water Drinking Act.
You said failed water report?
Yes. Radiation, pesticides, and herbicides.
I'll let David touch on that one as well.
I just said no.
Sure.
Thanks. Anybody else? No? Nope. Okay.
Yeah, might as well. Put your nail in the coffin. I understand.
What's you don't want to jinx it.
I wonder where in the status of the ordinance on garages is. I've been asking this since May. And about a month ago, they said they were going to contact Stan, had to do something before. And these two gentlemen worked on that ordinance when they were on the zoning. So. Hey, if we're not going to do it, let's just say we're not going to do it. And if we're going to do it, let's get the ball rolling. Thank you.
If you go below 70, it won't
count. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
I see an SDO. There's two of them over there.
Next item on the agenda, 7.0 Administrative Report, City Administrator David Stahl.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I have a few things here for you. The top of the list of what I have on my notes here is to let you know that the Planning and Zoning Commission met on October 17th to discuss the status of the garages. They set a public hearing. They took the ordinance that had been proposed to them by the mayor and prepared by the city attorney, directed me to make 4 minor alterations to the text of that as a preliminary proposal. They set a public hearing date for that of November 19th. That's a Monday night. It'll fall between the November city council meetings, so that'll be the third Monday. It'll be 7 p.m. in this room. As required, we'll publish notice of that. There's a 15-day public notice requirement for any zoning changes, so that will publish on November 1st. And their preliminary report will be available this week so that you can see what, so that can be circulated for the public hearing. I have placed at your places and out in the room a couple of postcards. The one that I have here that I wanted to mention first is the heavy pickup. We'll start our monthly heavy pickup to be on the first Monday. There is a little bit of guidance in this as to what we'll pick up. The intent is that it's household trash, not construction debris, not non-residential. The no hazardous household waste, which will include batteries and poisons and pesticides and fuels, anything like a gasoline engine, no tires, only those items that can go directly to a landfill will be picked up. Another rule of thumb we have for that is it would just be impossible for us to make an exhaustive list of everything we will pick up and we won't pick up. But if it's household waste, whether that's an exercising machine or a bicycle or old fence parts, if two people can pick it up and carry it out and set it to the roadside, then that will meet the requirements. So we don't have any particular size and shape. Mattresses, dressers, furniture, cabinets. If you take cabinets out of the garage yourself, we're not really keen on if you hire a company to come in and do major remodeling to have them put construction debris out. It won't pick up roofing, so if someone replaces a roof, dig all the old shingles off and pile in the roadside, that's not really what's intended. It's a way for people to get rid of those large items when they're cleaning up that we do. It is expanded from the cleanup greenup. So if you have a stump that two people can pick up and carry out and set by the road, we'll pick it up. If you need to cut it in half to pick it up with two people and put it out there, we'll pick it up in two halves. We're trying to get everything that we can. It's a single pass on that Monday. It's not like the curbside where they go through the whole city and take several days and then come back and make one more pass. This is just going to be one day. It will be a truck with a grapple hook. And while it mechanically picks things up as opposed to having a couple people throw it in the back of something, because it extends out, there is a weight limit as to what it can lift safely. So that's the heavy pickup. It is the first, it will be the first Monday in November, and I'm sure that there'll be some shake out of things that are put out that we didn't anticipate people would put out, and we'll have to just see where that goes, and we'll put more information out as we go. The second card, and this one, and you should have all received this in the mail. This shouldn't be the first time you see the one on the heavy pickup. This card you will see in your mail by the end of this week. This is a recycling card. This is notifying our residents that we're going to switch from Saturday pickup to picking up on Tuesday. That will be easier for Public Works to accommodate. That also will allow us to have a rain date. So if for some reason on Tuesday we can't get all of it, we'll come back on Wednesday. We're not in conflict with the regular trash pickup on Wednesday since it doesn't happen until Thursday. It also doesn't conflict with either heavy or regular pickups on Monday. Now it's a regular pickups, let me back up to this one for a moment. Our contract has for years had a heavy pickup being the Thursday in the contract. What the contract says, however, is that the trash hauler will make an effort to pick up the items if they have room and capacity for it. That's been historically problematic because at the beginning of the day of making routes through the city, they know you what their capacity looks like. And also our contract says that they can leave it if they have space for it, or they can take partial and take it in more than one collection. We'd really rather not have them sitting roadside even if it's halved, every few days, or Monday and Thursday and Monday and Thursday. So we're hoping that the heavy pickup will reduce that. You still can't put items out on Thursday. So those are the two postcard items. I'm still on general activities.
Anita, do you have a question?
I do have a quick question. So we're going to use a grappling hook to be able to pick up those items.
Yes.
Is there a weight limit? Do you have to know what the weight limit is?
What two people can pick up. So you're talking about like 140 pounds.
My next door neighbor cut down a pine tree, I guess, about a year ago. Trucks are right inside.
Yeah.
Cut. I don't know how long
the
cut.
I'm not sure I'd really consider that household waste.
And just the concrete, you know, they're like this, and then when they pick those up.
If there's small chunks that you could set out there, if you broke a slab up, you know, if it's the odd piece in the yard, yes. But if it's construction debris, no. You know, we're not trying to do construction.
Kind of like leftover stuff, probably broken bread.
And who did you talk to here when you asked for a copy of your permit and your demo certificate?
Well, I talked to Annie
upstairs
about my demolition.
Okay. Well, you asked tonight about that. I just was wondering why you didn't get that from them.
No, the letter of my approval for the extension of my. I don't know. It didn't come in today's mail either.
Okay, but you haven't asked for anybody for it?
No, because last time I got an extension, it came in the mail.
Yeah, it will eventually come in the mail. But
okay.
I just want to make sure you have an option for it.
And that's very time sensitive now. I mean, I'm getting pushed up against the clock.
Yeah, well, you know, we wouldn't know that.
Well, I know, and I didn't know that either until today, so I'd like to find out if I can pick
this
up tomorrow.
Okay. On the failed water reports, we had two, first of all, they weren't failed reports, they were technical violations with TCEQ. Neither one of them were affected water quality. There was nothing wrong with the water in either case. One was a sampling timing issue, and the other was a reporting issue of the reports being sent to them.
Well, on the report they sent me, it said failed here and failed there.
Well, I would need to see your report, because we send those out. The city sends us out. We've never sent one out with a failure on it, except for a reporting issue. So we've never had any violations of the water content at all. The water that we get is service water. We purchase from the La Porte Water Authority. It's the same water. All the city...
Well, Randy is above the radiation standard. Above the herbicide.
Okay, you'll have to bring that to me, because we've not sent you one that had anything above. Yes, sir.
Gosh, I hope I
followed
that like that.
Okay. And we have all the past years, and they're all on our website.
Yeah, well, I've only seen that last year and this year.
They're both on the website, so you can look there, too,
okay.
On our website. the next item is the city's telecommunications system.
Darlene.
Yes, ma'am.
She has those two questions. Deficit for the past 7 years and then the grant money in the budget.
Okay. Yeah, I'll speak to those. The city council had adopted budgets that were deficit in the sense that they drew against the reserves in those years prior to Ike. That's what was budgeted. They did not spend the money that was budgeted, and they did not spend in deficit. You follow that? So it was a deficit really isn't the right word, because the city had the funds to have spent the full amount in the budget. It would have drawn down the reserves if they had. But in those years, they did not do that. In the last 2 years, the only years that we actually spent the money to put us where we drew against the reserves. And of course, that's a decision the council makes. Grant budget, there is a grant budget. We were required to do a budget. The budget had to be approved. All of the expenditures are made and only with approval of the GLO. They're all part of the audit and the annual audit, and so that budget is audited annually. It's not an annual budget in the sense that we do not appropriate money annually. It's all in a single document. So there is a Texas Community Development Project budget that you can see, and it's actually online as well. If you look at last year's budget, the whole project budget was put in one place, and it shows all the breakdown of the money where it goes. And every bit of it is all. There is no latitude on the city's part of where that money is spent. None at all. It's all within the parameters of the grant. On the communication system, we're 99% installed now. We have our new phones. For the first time here, we have one in the council room. It will not ring, but it will allow us to call folks if we need to for from court or planning and zoning or for meetings that we have in here or council meetings. So we have expanded the system. The three buildings are tied together. And now I'm going to take you back to this postcard because it's the first piece of that education that we're putting out for our residents to share with them the phone numbers. On the back, you'll see it says important phone numbers. City Hall is a number that I think everyone is well familiar with. The police department is a brand new number. It's a 307 exchange number. Public Works is not a new number. It is the phone number we had in the Public Works building prior to Ike. And when that building was wiped out, that number is the number that we have on file with TCEQ and a number of other places as our emergency contact number for Public Works and Public Works number. So we had that number forwarded to City Hall. And now that we have recovered, at least our phone system, that now it goes back to ringing over to Public Works. Municipal Court is a number we've had here at City Hall all along. It rings directly to Municipal Court. And then we have a brand new line, the 281-307-1999, and that's a city information line. That will allow us to have, in essence, similar to the CARE line that is specific to the city of Shore Acres. So when there is a significant event that occurs here of any type, we have the ability to put a pre-recorded message on that line. We also went from having three incoming lines at City Hall to having a capacity that's equal to eight lines. We only have, counting myself, there's four people in City Hall. So in the past, with three lines, if Ann and Annie and Brenda were on the phone, I could neither make nor receive phone calls. And now we have fixed that log jam. But the other thing it does is now we have enough lines that we can't possibly talk to everybody who calls in. So we have some features that allow us to handle those calls and to do some handling. And one of the things you can do is call the information line, or if there is an event, for example, 146 is closed, and we're telling every person that calls the exact same information. When they call in, we can say, hold on just a moment, and we can transfer the information line, and they can hear that message while we answer the next call and talk to the next person, so we can efficiently share information. And then, of course, 911. So there's a lot of new features and advantages. Another is we no longer have to tell people to hang up and call another number, whether that is for the appraisal district, for the tax assessor collector, or for police dispatch. We're able now to transfer that call directly and just connect them up to whoever they need to talk to. So there's a lot of new features there that we're learning, and I think it's going to be a great service for our residents.
David, the information line you can update from your home, like on a weekend?
And we can update it from anywhere, yes, sir.
So far it's just you that does that?
So far we haven't updated it.
Okay.
But there'll be several department heads that will be able to do it, and others, so that we can get information in there.
So if we need police assistance, can we call the police department?
Now you can call dispatch if you need an officer to respond, but if you call the police department number,
okay,
the police department will have the first opportunity to answer. If there's no one available, then it will go to City Hall, and if no one's available, then you will get an attendant, and you'll have the option of pressing a number to get the dispatch. So you don't have to hang up and redial. You just will go through the progression, and then you can select the number. You can select the number for the information line as well. But we'll send you on to dispatch. If you have an emergency, go ahead and call 911 or call the dispatch number.
Well, I know shortly after I came in, the house downtown was purple and the Shoreacres Boulevard, and I drove down there and it was on fire. And I called 911, and before he was away, of course, I could give the street number so I could tell them where it was. And I think the question is, to me, is how come I didn't call? Call or dispatch at that time,
Any emergency, dial 911. If there's something on fire like that, just dial 911.
That's David, not... what happens when you see water gushing out on the weekend? So what do you do then?
You can call the Public Works number. It will ring at Public Works, because if we have a break, there's a chance they're already here. It'll give them an opportunity to answer. If they don't answer it in three rings, then it will take you to a handler and it will give you to dispatch. So it will say, if you're reporting, it will ask you. It won't just give you a dispatch, because we don't want to bombard them with nuisance calls. But it will ask, if you're trying to report a water break or other utility emergency, press, and it gives you a number. And if you press that, you will be connected with the dispatcher 24 hours a day. So it just has lots and lots of features. Those, you know, I know we all don't like the auto attendance where you call and you get a recording and push a button, but with limited staff, at least you can actually do something. And we have police, city hall, public works, municipal court, all have different messages. If you call municipal court and you don't get somebody, you'll have the option of getting a police officer, but you also have an option of pressing a number that will connect you with somewhere where you pay your ticket or your warrant right then on the phone, which is something we've never had available before for us to do. And those messages will change by the time of day. So on Friday at 2 o'clock, if you call City Hall, you're going to get the after-hours messaging. But if you call the police department or public works, you'll get the regular daytime handling. So it's all very automated, and I think it'll be very useful for us. Our water plant number one, round one repairs. We have one well now that's complete. I think 2 weeks ago they'd mentioned the columns up there where they had raised the casings and housings, and now we have a submergible pump in one and new stem. The second one may have been done since I was last here on Thursday, so we're getting completely brand new reworked pumps. The booster pumps have been set up on the platform now with the generator. Most of the valves and piping, supply piping to the manifold is in there. We're getting very close to making serious headway on the water plant. Water plant number two improvements. Friday, a week ago, we installed the altitude valve. It was done in the middle of the night, so to minimize any water outages. We started at about 11 p.m., required draining the water tower, so it was completely empty. We installed valves. We installed valves that let us isolate the altitude valve. The altitude valve will allow the system to operate at higher pressure. It's necessary when we get water plant number one repaired. If we didn't do that, it would pump enough water in the system. It would overflow the water tower all the time. So we had to get that control in there. On paper, the calculations said that we could run our small booster at that water plant against our pressure vessel over here with that valve, with the tower valved off, and we'd be able to have the higher pressure. There is a maximum head or maximum pressure on a booster, and the calculation said we'd be at about 60 psi. This is an occasion when good news is bad news. The booster actually outperformed the pump curve, and it produced about 68 psi, which is at least a good 5 psi higher than we want to operate our system. It puts too much stress on the system. Residential water could be as high as 70 psi, but 60 is our target, and 68 was too much. We did that while the tower was out of service and until the tower could be refilled. We produced enough excess pressure that we bled that pressure off into the tower during the day on Saturday. And the original plan was that we would just operate without the tower until Saturday night, and in the middle of the night we'd drop pressure so we could fill the tower. We had excess pressure, so we bled it off to the tower, and by by midday, the tower was full, and we could turn the booster off and go back on our normal system. So we are in a holding pattern there. We really can't operate that system now until the new plant is online at the higher pressure without causing a problem. That said, what we do have is a whole new capacity to pump water if we have another catastrophic fire event. At the time that we're flowing water out of a fire hydrant, that reduces your system pressure. We'll be able to pump, we have kicked that pump on, the altitude valve will close off when the tower gets full, and we'll be sending a much greater volume of water to where we have the need for the water. So we have already achieved a big leap forward in water system capacity for firefighting purposes if it's needed. The next item is the elevated tank inspection. You'll recall that during the last two budget cycles, I had warned you that we were going to be in the position of having to do some serious work on the water tower, that because of Ike, it was not the time for us to do it, that we couldn't take the tower out of service until water plant number one is in service. We took the opportunity. Previously, we had had someone dive the tank, which you actually put a scuba diver inside the tank and do an inspection. The conditions in which that inspection is done is not as good as if the tank is empty and you can get a clear shot of it. So we had the tank empty, so now was the time to do an inspection. So we did have the firm come out under the direction of the city engineer. They made the inspection. There are some items that we already knew without having gone in and inspecting the bowl that were in need of service with this tower. This is one of the anchor bolts of the column leg. It's a four-leg tower. So this is where it meets the pad. These are some of the other structural elements that are pretty well deteriorated. This is looking up the stack. The middle piece there is a pipe and not a support, and you can see some rust-throughs on that. And while that's rusted, it's really not in terrible condition. It's rate satisfactory. It would certainly be a candidate for recoating. The ladder has some deterioration that is usable. This is at the top. This is the access lid into the tank. We replaced that lid about 6 years ago, and this has deteriorated, of course, since then. This is the ladder down into the bowl of the tank. The ladder is in such condition that the surveyors wouldn't use it to make entry to the tower. I can't say that I blame them.
How old is the water tower?
The water tower is about 40 years old. The useful life of a tower is typically 50 years, so it could be rehabbed and get another 10 years out of it. This is looking into the bowl. Most of that's just surface rust. I've personally seen tanks where the walls resemble what those rungs look like on this ladder, so it's really not in terrible condition, but it does need to be resurfaced. Yeah, there's going to be pinholes in there. That's not uncommon either. That's a welding operation. There's the catwalk at the top with corrosion. So that's all the pictures we've got. It's a 50,000 gallon elevated water tank. There's a couple things that we need to look at. The letter from the city engineer that accompanies this right here. His recommendation is that the tower be replaced in 2 to 3 years. There is no doubt that there's lead paint under there, so the cost of repainting and blasting and repainting requires skirting. Even removing is going to require some lead protections. One of the things that pushes towards replacing the tank is to be able to reevaluate the 50,000 gallons at the right size of capacity. There's actually an argument to be made for not making it too large or too small. 50,000 gallons is on the small side, and so when you look at the cost of a tank, the cost per 1,000 gallons goes up the smaller the tank is. You lose an economy of scale. The major thing that we have the opportunity here in replacing the tower in the future is making it 21 feet taller. The operating system pressure is dictated by the elevation or the height of the tower, the elevated storage. That would allow us to operate the system without an altitude valve, which increases reliability. So what we're looking at is 2 to 3 years with this tower, with the altitude valve, and developing a long-range plan to replace the tower with one of whatever the proper capacity is and at the proper elevation to work with the new system. But it really have an advantage in that we will be able to have the new plant online, we'll be able to operate it for a year or two, and work all the bugs out and see how that works. With the new plant online, we can take the water tower out of service with no degradation to water service in the city. We can operate with the pressure vessel that we have in the new plant and supply ample water. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, and the pressure's off. The important thing was for this tower to continue to be serviceable until we get the new water plant online. And the fact that he says in 2 to 3 year time period gives me about 2 years more than I thought we would probably have on that tower presently. No action is required at this time. This is just an update to council on where we are on that tower. Do you have any questions?
Council, has any questions? Audience, any questions?
I was just wondering along the, you know, pollution standards and stuff like that. You've gone from like, what was it, like 8 ounces 3 times a week of certain fish to 8 ounces once a month. Is it contamination of the bay there reaching a certain point? The calorie you can't eat, you know, 5 different kinds of fish, but 8 ounces a month, is that going to progress?
Well, that's not really on the agenda, so I don't know that we can talk about that, but I don't know the answer to that, to be truth.
And I can tell you what website is. There are some websites that talk about...
The first one I would suggest would be Texas Parks and Wildlife, but also on the signs down there on Beach Island, exactly what you're referring to. There should be some information on there to direct you to the authority to have jurisdiction over that particular item and look into that, because that's probably what I'm going to do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What's worst case scenario in terms of cost for water tower? Just
ballpark. It's going to be about $500,000 to $750,000. And the city engineer is pulling together qualified numbers on that to get it down to what reality is. The economics of the tower, the common popular construction now is to have a concrete body and a steel bowl, but at 50 to 70, 80,000 gallon range, it is not economically viable to do that. So you're looking at going back with a 3 or 4 leg spherical tower like we have. It might be a different size. You could also do, a true spherical tower as opposed to a leg tower has a steel shaft that goes up and then blooms out to a bowl. That type of tower runs just about $100,000 to $150,000 more than an equal capacity 4-leg tower. And driven by cost and size of community, it's unlikely that we would be willing to spend the additional $150,000 on that cosmetic, because it really just comes down to being a more cosmetic maintenance issue. A little easier to maintain the spherical than the leg, but a lot of extra money for no change in your water capacity or system.
Okay.
Is there any kind of grants available?
There are not for this community. We are too wealthy.
Too wealthy.
All right. Moving along on the agenda, item 7.2 is financial report. You should have a financial report.
The financial report is there. This is the unaudited year-end numbers. See, we ended the year with $37,754 in the general fund, $44,189 in the utility fund, and tax pool, $953,933. We also have $260,000 in Forbes Choice deposit. I see that sheet is not there, but we've had no activity on the street with the deposit. We've not drawn on those other than collect interest in at least the last 10 years.
Okay, next item on the agenda under business 8.0 is consideration approval of invoices. Do I have a chance to turn those over? Entertain a motion.
Motion to pay the bills.
Second.
Second. Matt, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Invoices approved. Item 8.2, update on participation, National Flood Insurance Program Community Rating System. You got any of that on that one too? Davis?
Yeah, I put a handout in your packet on that to give you some background information. The community rating system is a means by which the federal government encourages you to seek compliance with flood regulations and to adopt greater regulations and ensure compliance, and in return for that they offer discounts to those policies. If you turn to the second page, the back of the first page, these are some numbers for specifically for Shore Acres. You can see here that the number of premiums in force in the city of Shore Acres is 585 policies. Out of that, the ones at the far right that say PRP, those are preferred policies, 41. Those are very old flood insurance policies that are, in essence, grandfathered to where they're at. And there are no discounts available for any grandfathered policies. So no matter what you do with CRS, there's no discounts to be earned. That said, the next one over that has the X, those are also grandfathered. It's just a different type of grandfathered. We have about 22% of the city prior to 2007 was in a Zone X. And if you had purchased a flood insurance policy when you were in Zone X and maintained it still, of which we have 115, they get a lower premium. But they are eligible to get a discount on the CRS program. And then the one that says SFHA, which is Special Flood Hazard Area, all of the city is in a Special Flood Hazard, 100% of the city. And so you just really, it's everybody else that's not either in an ex-grandfathered or in a preferred, which is 429. Those folks pay an average premium of $888 annual premium. You can see here that CRS has classes. Classes run from 9 to 1. The lower the number, the more the discount. You start in at a 5% discount. At a 9, and then you go in 5% increments until you can get to a 45% discount of the Class 1 classifications. There is a Class 10, and a Class 10 is if you participate in the CRS and they kick you out, then they classify you as a 10, which is no discount. So you will see some communities in Texas which are on your tax list. There's at least one or two that have a 10, and they have been kicked out of the program. Yes, sir? but what this does tell you is that we can produce some savings for our residents just at a Class 9. We can save our citizens about 40, $43, $44 a year in flood insurance. We started the process with CRS in 2009. Worked on it really hard in 2010. It's a points program, and you have to get over 500 points for entry level. And we did that. We went through all the process and documented the various things. For example, we approve and maintain elevation certificates. So we have the mapping. We do outreach. We have hazard disclosure materials that we've done. We've not done those the last year. We have the higher regulatory standards. You recall we did a special surge zone that is east of Sunrise, but we allow no fill, and we have higher engineering standards. All of those types of things earn us points. Having a certified floodplain manager earns us points. We went through the application process, which is Region 6 FEMA that does that, and we found out we were ineligible for our application to be accepted because my predecessor as emergency management coordinator didn't see the need for the city to adopt a what we call a MAP, a mitigation action plan. You only have an opportunity to file and have approved by FEMA a hazard mitigation action plan once every 5 years. And so the bad news was we became ineligible. Through that process, we and the Texas Water Development Board personnel we were working with on our application didn't realize that that was a showstopper and hadn't asked the question. I knew we hadn't had the map because we had 32 grant applications denied under the Stafford 404 process following Ike because we did not have on file an approved action plan. So that was, well, that was all bad news. The good news was we were up on the cycle of the 5 year. So in 2011, we did prepare a mitigation action plan. We did that jointly with Harris County. We have filed that. It took about 8 months to go through the process and get it approved. And we now, March, will be able to have the app. They only accept, it's not open applications all the time. You have two times a year that you can file the application. So we're in queue for the March application, which would be about an October approval time period. And so we're back on track. Most of the work that we do doesn't have to be repeated. There is what's called a CAB, which is a community assistance visit that the state does that's required to be refreshed. And so there are just some formalities, but we are back on track. I believe that we will be able to enter the program not at a 9, but we'll be able to enter the program as low as a 6 or a 7. So the silver lining of such is that in the original application, we would have come into the program at an 8. And now, because of the time that's lapsed and because we've continued to do the required elements, such as floodplain management and the reviewing and rejecting, amazingly, about 25% of the flood elevation certificates that are submitted to the city get rejected. They're deficient and corrected. Those things allow us to continue to build points. So we keep improving where we stand for our interests. We'll enter in a better position. The certificate, elevation certificates, really are one of the really big points. They come in and they pull 10, and if you have two that fail their review, then they pull another 10 for each failure, and you're not entitled to any failures on the next set. So if there's one failure, they pull 10 more, and if they get two, they pull 20 more. And so it's a pretty tough hurdle on that. So we're really dead serious here about reviewing all the elevation certificates and rejecting the ones that are bad. It's just amazing how many are. We have an abnormally high number. The next thing I would point you to is there's some of the eligibility requirements, and you notice it doesn't say anything about a map in here, the mitigation action plan. The next page talks about some of the zoning districts. It shows the premium discount scale. And then the next two pages are every community in Texas that is in the CRS program. And it is just slightly more than one page, because you have about half on the first page and maybe two-thirds of the second page. If you go through there and you look, you see that there are not, I'm not sure there are any cities on this list that are as small as Shore Acres. The closest would be Taylor Lake Village. And you can see Taylor Lake Village has had their CRS rescinded, and they are a 10, so they've been kicked out of the program. Our neighbor to the north, Morgan's Point, is not on the list. Tiki Island is probably the next one on here that's close to being on a par with us, and they're in the program at an 8. So I am looking forward for the work that we did in 2010 to finally pay some dividends in 2013. The bad news, I suppose, is that after we get in the program, they give us a rate, you can continue to earn points, but you have to wait for another application cycle before you can apply for the additional discount. And the discounts only apply to policies that renew after you're granted CRS entrance and given your rating. So if in March our application is accepted, in October, say we get that set, it would be about January before it's reported on the list for insurance companies, and they would, if any policies are renewed after that, would then automatically get the discount. Our residents don't have to do anything. It's part of our community number, which is another important thing on the elevation certificates, because a fair number of elevation certificates that have turned in here, that's what is used to write the policy, and a fair number of them have LaPorte's community number on it instead of Shore Acres.
So the magic timeline is possibly January 2014.
Yes, sir.
Okay. It looks like the average could be around $100 a home.
If
we get in that class.
Yes, sir.
Any questions for the council? Look forward to listening.
Well, I see that Kima has a 5 rating.
Yes, that's what you call throwing lots of money at it. They're really proud of that 5.
I bet they are.
It's
to give their residents a 25% discount.
It's really hard. That's up there with the city of Houston. The city of Houston has a staff of about a dozen people who administer the program for the city of Houston, and they also have a 5.
Now this is for anyone in the city of Shore Acres that they can do the CRS program, discount.
It'd just be automatic. The city does the CRS. We do all the work, and then anyone that has a flood insurance policy in Shore Acres would automatically get the discount.
Are you saying the elevation certificates, a lot of them are wrong? What's that do to the homeowner? If they're wrong, do you have to go get another elevation certificate?
It is when the elevation certificates are primarily for new construction. So when you build a new home or you elevate an existing home, you get an elevation certificate that shows what your elevation is of the living area. There is the federal minimum. We have a 1 foot freeboard, so it's a foot higher. So you get a, if you built to the city of Shore Acres standards, you get a discount for having gone a foot over. Every full foot that you go over that, up to 3 feet, your premium gets lower. But the kinds of things that are on that are the wrong structure type. It's a diagram number. They've got the wrong diagram number. They have the wrong location of the house. I've seen two elevation certificates that were turned in with latitude and longitude in Lamarck, Texas. And so those kinds of things. some are probably very helpful, some are very not helpful. Our concern is that they be accurate. I got an elevation certificate on Fairfield. We all know where Fairfield's at, right? It was in the 600 block of Fairfield, an existing straddle grade house, and it said that the elevation of the slab was 21 feet.
Ooh.
So, don't need to be a surveyor to say there's something wrong with that number.
That's impressive.
So, anyhow, it cuts both ways, but it just depends. But for us, it would hurt everybody by not getting the discount if we let people turn in elevation certificates that were wrong on their face so they get a lower premium. It would hurt everybody else.
But existing homes that you're free and clear. Even if we didn't have, I don't know if we even had an elevation certificate. How far back did that go? That was for part of the city.
78. So anything before 78, we wouldn't have it on.
I'm still a little bit confused. I don't mean to sound so intelligent or anything, but you're saying you get a discount from our insurance company? How does the insurance company, if you're escrowed with your mortgage or something, how do they know if there's a discount available?
It's automatic. The flood insurance is an annual policy. All flood insurance, there's an asterisk there, but all flood insurance comes from FEMA. And insurance companies like Allstate and Farmers and others, they can write policies, but they're really writing policies on the FEMA coverage. When they do that, the premium is set by FEMA. And FEMA publishes a big list, and there's a community number. They look under our community number, and it says what the premium is for our community. And they do that every year. So your mortgage company, if they're the ones who purchase the insurance on your behalf, if that's what happens, then when they get their, when they apply for the renewal, they'll just get a lower premium. They don't care. They don't care why. They'll just get another, and it will be a lower premium that will reflect the discount. And it's fully automatic. Nobody has to apply for it or ask for it. Or,
okay. That's what I need to know.
Okay, no further business. We'll adjourn at 7:56 p.m. Thanks for coming.